Ukraine demands an immediate ceasefire and withdrawal of Russian forces as the West continues to band together, issuing additional sanctions and providing military aid. What effect is it having on the war?
Strengthening its security and defense forces itself, including in the cyber realm. We also see an idea of increasing the size of the EU.
Plus, the United Nations General Assembly and Security Council meet. And later in the program, the challenges facing refugees attempting to flee the fighting.
It is only possible for women and children people who are poor. It takes for about 3 days to get out.
Today is Monday, February 28th, and from the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Ukraine demanded an immediate ceasefire and withdrawal of Russian forces as its delegation met Monday for talks with Russia on the border with Belarus. Mykhailo Podolyak, an advisor to the head of the office of the president of Ukraine, says that the first round of talks with Russia about ending the fighting in Ukraine has concluded and that more talks could happen soon. But Monday night, there were also reports of additional attacks on Kyiv. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky also urged the European Union to grant his country immediate membership into the bloc. The chairman of the EU leaders, Charles Michel, and the head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, will meet with French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Paris on Monday evening for talks. Ukraine has an association membership with the 27-nation bloc, but wants to become a full member, something that Russia is opposed to. An official told Reuters News that Ukraine's membership has so far not been discussed so as not to antagonize Moscow. But the Russian invasion of Ukraine has changed things. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from a hotel bomb shelter in Kyiv Monday evening as bombing has resumed.
After about 2 days of quiet, the bombs began here in Kyiv, the Ukrainian capital, again tonight. And the city is locking down once again with a curfew. We're down here in what is a bomb shelter for this hotel. It's part of the garage that has been set aside for people to sleep in if the attacks continue, if it becomes dangerous to be above ground. And also, there are a lot of families here with children. Some of them are down here just to avoid their children being afraid. Today, we saw the city mostly empty, except for people leaving their houses with suitcases. Many people are heading for the borders, trying to escape. There's talks going on, peace talks between Ukraine and Russia, but people are afraid that the violence of last week is soon to return. We also saw some stores open today with some lines outside, but not many. Most of the businesses here are still closed. And by evening, most people were back again inside, many heading underground to try to keep safe tonight. Many people here fear that the violence of last week is going to return soon and possibly worse than it was before. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Kyiv, Ukraine.
The U.S. on Monday announced that the Office of Foreign Assets Control prohibited United States persons from engaging in transactions with the Central Bank of the Russian Federation, the National Wealth Fund of the Russian Federation, as well as the Ministry of Finance of the Russian Federation. Monday's moves against Putin's government's main war chest will have a major effect, according to a senior Biden administration official who was speaking to reporters early Monday. White House officials estimate that the bank holds about $630 billion in several currencies, including U.S. dollars. Wall Street's main indices were also down late Monday as investors assessed the fallout from the new set of sanctions imposed by the Western countries on Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. Russia's central bank more than doubled its key policy rate on Monday as well and introduced some capital controls as the country faced deepening economic isolation. But its governor said sanctions had stopped it from selling foreign currency to prop up the ruble, which has plunged to a record low. The admission that the restrictions had effectively tied the Bank of Russia's hands underscores the ferocity, the backlash to Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. In addition, FIFA and the International Olympic Committee also announced that they would not let Russian teams participate in international competitions. Now, to keep up to date with additional developments, as they are always changing, visit voanews.com/flashpoint and follow VOA News on Twitter. The U.S. intelligence says that it expects Belarusian leader Alexander Lukashenko to throw his 48,000-strong army into the war raging in Ukraine to reinforce Russia in its faltering invasion of the country. Jamie Detmer is in Lviv, Ukraine, and I spoke to him a short while ago.
Well, we actually broke the story, VOA, this morning about U.S. intelligence fears, and they've been confirmed by lots of European diplomats I've talked to, that Belarus is likely to throw in completely with the Russians on this, and that Lukashenko, Alexander Lukashenko, the Belarusian leader, will commit his army, which is about 48,000 strong. That is, if the talks which are going on between the Ukrainians and the Russians fail, which, you know, many people are assuming it will. That will change things considerably, because from what we understand from the U.S. intelligence assessment, the Belarusians would likely not only be targeting and reinforcing and helping the Russians in Kiev, but they would also turn their attention to northwest Ukraine, just above Lviv, and it would involve Lviv, and that will change the battlefield fundamentally. It will also cause a considerable problem with this humanitarian refugee crisis, because Lviv is where a lot of the refugees and evacuees are coming. So this could turn, you know, a crisis into a bit, well, a bit. It could turn a crisis into a humanitarian catastrophe very, very quickly.
Jamie, you've been traveling across Ukraine covering the war. What have you seen? What are people telling you about what's going on the ground?
Well, I'm hearing from a lot of people. We took a mighty long journey, 20 hours from Kiev. We worked our way out of the city and moved across to Lviv. It's a drive that should have taken more like 6 hours. We took 20 hours, which actually was quick compared to some people. And so on the road and here in Lviv, I've been talking to people from all across the country. They're coming from everywhere, Steve. They're coming from Mariupol, Donetsk, Kharkiv, Kiev itself, all over the country. Half of Ukraine is on the move, trying to get families, children to safety and across the borders. And there's huge waits at these borders. Here in Poland, near the Polish border where we are, down in Slovakia, down at the borders of Romania and Hungary. And so we hear the tales of what they have endured and what they've seen, which is, of course, the terror of war, the hurtfulness of guns, buildings being destroyed, people terrified, and a lot of them are moving because they want to get their families out of the way. And some of the heartfelt stories are younger people who have said goodbye to parents and grandparents who are elderly and don't want to leave their homes because they're old, they're infirm, or they're cussed, or they want to remain rooted in a very turbulent world. So you're seeing very traumatized people who have no idea where they are heading, where they're going, or how they will be received when they cross these borders and whether people will be kindly to them. We've also met people in Lviv who are going the other way. People who were volunteering to fight, many of them who were veterans in 2014, 2015, fighting in the Donbass in the east. But as ever in war, and this is something that's always struck me, and I've covered more than a dozen wars, is this extraordinary, conflict, almost jostling between the familiarity of life, people going around doing their domestic chores, because Lviv hasn't been attacked yet, and this chaos that's going on around them.
Jamie Detmer is currently in Lviv, Ukraine. Jamie, thank you very much for your reporting, and please stay safe.
Thanks, Steve.
Russia's advancement into Ukraine continues to meet resistance as more countries pledge military aid to Kyiv. Craig Albert is a political science professor at Augusta University in Georgia, and as well is its director of the Master of Arts in Intelligence and Security Studies. He began our conversation by giving this assessment on the current state of the war.
I think the first product we need to look at is how President Putin underestimated the Ukrainian National Defense Forces and the partisan forces and their strength and their resolve. So if you look at how Russia has engaged in conflict with Syria, with the Republic of Georgia, and with Chechnya over the last 20 years, they've pretty much gone in with a quasi-overwhelming force, a full destruction of cities, massive air assaults, especially in Chechnya starting in 1999, in order to lay the groundwork for a larger invasion force. They did not do that to begin this conflict in Ukraine. I think they strategically did not do so, so that they can mitigate any civilian loss or civilian casualties or any type of international condemnation on that front, because they faced that in the past. So they went in underwhelmingly, and they have faced brutal attacks, counterassaults because of that, and have performed pretty poorly. So we're seeing massive numbers of Russian dead so far. The estimates are ranging anywhere from 5,500 to 7,500. So put that in perspective, how many troops the United States lost in Iraq and Afghanistan over the course of 20 years is roughly equivalent to what Russian forces have lost in a week of fighting in Ukraine. So that's pretty profound. And the second element we should discuss is just the united front and resistance of the international community to Russia, which I don't think President Putin properly planned for either. He didn't plan for that mainly because of the international response to the Republic of Georgia invasion in 2008 and to the Crimea invasion and East invasion in 2014 in Ukraine. And there you had some talk, some rhetoric, some few sanctions, but nothing like we're experiencing right now. You see a united Europe, a united North America, pretty much a united world effort to condemn President Putin's actions, not just in rhetoric, but in sanctions and sending military armament and arms. So it's a return to a pre-Cold War era, or a Cold War era, where it's a united front against Russia, and President Putin was just not expecting that.
I wanted to follow up with that, specifically focusing on Europe, because as you mentioned, there has been, you know, this coalition of nations being brought together to impose sanctions and take other action in support of Ukraine, with even Germany this past weekend announcing that it would okay, you know, distribution of arms to Ukraine in a change of the policies under former Chancellor Angela Merkel. You know, how do you look at this conflict having an impact on Europe as a whole?
I think Europe recognizes that it needs to do two things: strengthen its security and defense forces itself, including in the cyber realm. So we see lots of money over the past 48, 72 hours being dedicated to the internal defense, external defense, and cyber defenses of European states, including NATO and the EU. We also see an idea of increasing the size of the EU. This is something Ukraine has asked for, to be formally included and inducted into the EU. This has not been a thought for the EU for some years now, about enlarging itself or increasing its member states. But now, even though it's unlikely Ukraine joins anytime soon, the idea that this is a discussion again for the European Union is something quite phenomenal and quite surprising. You also see some nation state actors that don't usually engage in any type of sanctions regimes or norms against an attacking state, such as Switzerland, which is now considering increasing its sanctions against Russia. So we're seeing some type of development that we haven't seen in international relations or security studies on the European continent for some time now, which is a decrease in the hesitancy to engage in offensive stances and postures towards an attacking aggressor, which is quite phenomenal. It's groundbreaking in international relations.
Really quickly, what's your assessment of the different sanction packages that have been levied against Russia?
The possibility of two outcomes for President Putin. The first is that President Putin is so isolated and so squashed with these sanctions that are targeting the oligarchs in Russia, the banks, the financial system, and now himself as well, which is a phenomenal, groundbreaking sanction leveled against him by the United States and NATO as well. He could push his resistance. So some of this talk about his nuclear deterrent force, and now with the talk of asking Belarus to formally send their 45,000 troops into Ukraine, might be a response to the sanctions being imposed. The other possible opportunity is that Russia becomes so entrenched in sanctions that the people start to feel it and suffer, and they might take to the streets and start a regime change, or a process of a regime change as well.
Craig Albert is the director of the Master of Arts in Intelligence and Security Studies at Augusta University. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. The United Nations Refugee Agency says that more than 500,000 refugees have fled for neighboring countries. Earlier today, I spoke with Anna Chernikova, who's also in Lviv, Ukraine, to get a better understanding of what's transpiring there as people continue to struggle to escape the conflict.
The road to the direction of Lviv is super difficult. So if you go from the capital, for instance, it takes, instead of 5 hours, it takes like 15 hours. But now it's even worse because people who try to reach the border of Poland, for instance, they just stay. So it's a couple of days that they stay at the border. The road is very, very busy. A lot of people are trying to escape or just to move to Lviv or the region or escape the country. Well, people are there, definitely. Yes, we had war in the east in Donbas, but it was obviously it was different. Now the whole country is under the fire. So border with Poland, we have like 25 to 30 kilometers of traffic jam, and men are not allowed out of the country, men from 18 to 60, because of the general mobilization. So mostly there are women and children. A lot of people just leave their cars and walk across the border.
Anna, you mentioned that incredibly long traffic jam getting to Lviv, the struggle of people trying to get across the border. Can you explain more about what you're seeing as people arrive in Lviv and say goodbye to their families and then make that trek across the border to get away from the fighting?
It is only possible for women and children or people who are foreign. It takes for about 3 days to get out, 3 to 4 days. Some people, if we talk about Poland border, it's a bit easier if you cross the border to Slovakia, Romania, or Hungary. But Poland is the most busy one. It is possible only, again, I will just repeat myself, it's possible only for women and children for now. So a lot of people just, a lot of men just bring their wives and children to the border and then come back to Ukraine. Some people just bring children to the border and meet their relatives from other countries and then just come back to Ukraine.
Anna Cherikova is reporting for VOA in Lviv, Ukraine. Thank you, and please be safe.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
The United Nations General Assembly took up discussion on Russia's war in Ukraine ahead of an afternoon Security Council meeting. Sergei Kislytsa is the Ukrainian ambassador to the United Nations, and he was addressing the General Assembly.
The General Assembly should be vocal in demanding from the Russian Federation to stop its offensive against Ukraine. In recognizing Russian actions as an act of aggression against a sovereign and independent state, in demanding from Russia to immediately, completely, and unconditionally withdraw its forces from the territory of Ukraine within its internationally recognized borders.
But Russia's ambassador, Vasily Nebeznia, also took time during his address to criticize Ukraine. Nebenzia said that the route of the current crisis lies in the actions of Ukraine itself, and for many years it sabotaged and flouted the direct obligations under the Minsk protocols. Now, earlier today, the United Nations Human Rights Council overwhelmingly approved a request to hold an urgent debate later this week on the crisis in Ukraine stemming from Russia's invasion of that country. Lisa Schlein has that story.
The proposal was approved by 29 countries in the 47-member council. 13 countries abstained, and 5, China, Cuba, Eritrea, Russia, and Venezuela, voted against the proposal. The vote took place after an impassioned plea by Yevhenia Filipenko, Ukrainian ambassador to the UN in Geneva. She called on the Council to hold Russia accountable for what she called an unprovoked, unjustified attack on her country. In just 4 days, she said, the toll of destruction in Ukraine has become devastating. She said 352 people, including 16 children, have been killed, and some 1,700 people have been wounded, including 160 children. She said Russian bombing of civilian infrastructure, roads, and bridges has left hundreds of thousands of people without electricity and water and cut off communications.
Russian forces attempt to sow panic among the population by specifically targeting kindergartens and orphanages, hospitals, and mobile medical aid brigades, thus committing acts that may amount to war crimes. And Ukraine has filed the case against Russia in the International Court of Justice to bring Russia to account.
The Russian ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Gennady Gatilov, accused Ukraine of committing multiple atrocities against people living in Ukraine's southeastern Donetsk and Luhansk regions. He speaks through an interpreter.
Before us, we have nothing other than the usual attempt of Kiev to distract attention, the attention of the international community, away from what they have been doing for nearly 8 years now, which is a targeted destruction of completely innocent people in Donetsk and Lugansk, women, children, and the elderly.
Since 2014, more than 14,000 people in Donetsk and Luhansk have been killed in fighting between Russian-backed separatists and Ukrainian government forces. Russian President Vladimir Putin recognized the independence of the two rebel republics a week ago. Western governments condemned this action. They said Putin's decision to send so-called peacekeepers to safeguard the sovereignty and independence of the separatist region was a pretext to invade Ukraine. The Human Rights Council opened a five-week session Monday. It has decided to hold the urgent debate on the situation of human rights in Ukraine stemming from the Russian aggression on Thursday. This follows a three-day high-level segment with the participation of heads of state and other dignitaries from more than 140 countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
One of Australia's biggest satellite television services has suspended broadcast of the Russian state broadcaster RT over the conflict in Ukraine. Phil Mercer reports the government in Canberra has imposed more sanctions on Russia as international anger over its invasion intensifies.
The Kremlin-backed channel told its viewers that it's being taken off the air by a major Australian satellite network.
And now a leading Australian pay TV company, Foxtel, will no longer distribute our channel RT, citing the crisis in Ukraine. Well, Foxtel has sent a letter to us here at RT, basically saying it ended distribution over, quote, concern about the situation in Ukraine. The channel added that it considers it has the right to do so under the license agreement with this network.
RT's deputy editor-in-chief, Annabelle Keener, told the Russian state broadcaster that the Australian ban is unfair.
If ever there were time to recognize the importance of all fact-gathering news and understanding of all views, it is now.
The European Union announced Sunday it will ban RT and Sputnik, another state-backed broadcaster news agency, because EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says they spread their lies to justify Putin's war. The British government says RT is part of Russia's global disinformation campaign. Australian authorities are imposing more sanctions on President Vladimir Putin and his inner circle, including financial and travel bans on Russian officials and a block on the export of Australian goods for use in oil and gas exploration and weapons production. The Canberra government is also sending millions of dollars of what it calls lethal military aid to Ukraine, with Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg telling the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that talks are continuing with the United States and its allies.
Those discussions are ongoing about the nature of that lethal equipment. Obviously, we've made public the non-lethal support that we're providing. We have already put sanctions on more than 350 Russian individuals, including Vladimir Putin himself. Overnight, I spoke to my US counterpart, US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, and we agreed to continue to cooperate closely in turning the screws on Vladimir Putin and his cronies.
President Putin Sunday ordered Russia's nuclear forces to be put on high alert, telling military officers that leading NATO powers have made aggressive statements. Frydenberg says that's a worrying escalation in the conflict. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison told a Brisbane radio station that he will speak with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky later Monday. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And that's going to do it for us today. Don't forget, the news doesn't stop when the show ends. So be sure to stay up to date with the latest developments on Ukraine, as well as other news and events from around the world at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.